Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
We just beat ourselves. You know, I had a lot of mistakes on my behalf. Three turnovers, that shouldn't happen. But, you know, they came out to play. You know, we just started off slow. You just got to do better next time. But moving forward, get ready for this offseason.
How did the Ravens get pushed around the way that they did on Saturday? Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Baltimore, the most exciting team in the league to watch all year long. A dominant offense. The best rushing team we've ever seen before. They took what basically Washington did under the Shanahans in 2012 with Robert Griffin, and they raised the game a couple levels.
Yeah.
Maybe even perfected it, to be honest with you. Lamar Jackson, a better version in that offense of what Robert Griffin was, and you know, they went through their tight ends, and it seemed like they just plucked those dudes, those big hulking presences.
An assembly line.
Ran the seam
Andrews,
down the field.
Hurst and Boyle. Yeah.
Jackson throws that seam ball really well into the end zone. But it didn't matter come Saturday night because the Titans got up 7-0, and then they got up 14-0, and slowly but surely, Baltimore got taken out of what it does well and forced to throw from the pocket and to become a traditional NFL team. And you knew that that would be their undoing. Here is my issue, and we do this all over the place. We make this some big declarative statement.
A referendum.
Yeah, everything has to mean something. What did it mean that Baltimore lost? And some people are going way too far. Like I heard on national radio people saying, you're never going to win a Super Bowl with Lamar Jackson. And I think that's such a dumb comment. This guy's 23 and has had so much success. Some people were saying, you know, the way that Lamar Jackson plays, great for stats, but never going to win in the playoffs. What? Again, it doesn't make any sense. Now, I don't know if I sound as dumb when I say what I'm about to say, and maybe I shouldn't be making any big declarations either, but all year long, Danny, what you and I have talked about is this is well and good when they're front-running. I just don't think, and I talked to Warren Sharp about this, who's the biggest supporter of Lamar Jackson in the world, and a guy that I learn a lot from, and he's as analytically proficient and smart as anybody. But when he was on the show, I said, listen, wait till they fall behind. That's kind of my concern. This is all good until that happens. It's still my fear. Should we not take away, though, like when I say they'll always lose this type of game if they fall behind, is that fair or not? Because you saw it happen, but the sample size is still small. I still, if I'm the Ravens, I'm running everything back the same next
100%,
year.
100%, yeah.
You got the... Everyone on your offense from that number one unit is back in under contract. But against the Chargers last year, against the Titans this year, you fell behind. Jackson had to throw, and you see what happens. Would you tweak anything?
So the idea that they could never win a Super Bowl this way is ludicrous.
It's crazy.
The idea that they might not fall behind by double-digit points for three games, that's what you're talking about, right? If they're within a score for three games, they could still play the way they play
exactly.
And come back and win. That's impossible
but,
to somebody?
You
that
get,
seems crazy.
When I say if and when you fall behind like this,
right.
You are built worse to overcome it than almost everybody.
I don't think there's any doubt about that, right? And that's the – people take that as some sort of end-all, be-all. So, therefore, you've got to change everything, or therefore, it was a waste of time to go 14-2 playing this way? It seems a little bit silly to me.
I think you go back to the well and try to get three, four more kicks at the can, and you hope that one of these years, a la the Nationals – the stars align.
Yeah.
Now, to me, that's how I would go about this. I know going in, it's hard. It's hard to win a Super Bowl, period. It's hard for the 49ers and the Packers and the Seahawks. Aaron Rodgers has one of these things. Peyton Manning, before he limped his way and basically got carried to his second, had one of these things. So it's going to take, to me, kind of one magical carpet ride for them. My point is that you can more easily do it, and you're better off if you're multifaceted, if you're a better passing team than they are ever going to be, probably the way that they're currently designed. That doesn't just mean with Lamar Jackson as a passer, because he can run with what they ask him to.
Right. I mean, so I would say you need a pass rusher, so you don't have to blitz 50% of the time. You need
everyone else needs to be a little better.
You need your wide receiver that was supposed to be your marquee addition, forgive the pun there, but Hollywood Brown, to be healthy all the time, or at least close to it, as it seemed like he was in and out of the lineup almost every week. Maybe you need Willie Sneed not to drop passes, or Mark Andrews not to have a ball go between his hands. I mean, here's the thing. It looked like a blowout, right? It looked like Tennessee dominated the game. Baltimore forced a punt. It wasn't a three and out, but it was basically a three-plus out, right? They get the ball back. They're marching down the field. They're doing what Baltimore does. Pass, little high. I thought it was catchable for Andrews. Tips off his hand. Turnover, then Tennessee starts to do their thing.
How about the number of drops, you're right, on the balls that he did put where they needed to be?
One score game, it's a fourth down, boom, Tennessee stops you. One play later, now it's 14-0. Game script, if Lamar Jackson gets that first down, they don't do a jumbo, but they do the normal thing where you can't stop Lamar Jackson in space, you get a first down, we're having a different conversation today. And listen, Tennessee deserves this, and they were the better team, and they deserve to win. But my
way
point
better
is,
team.
We act as if this was... What a referendum. What if, I'm not saying wait, but in general, people can't wait to draw truisms about football based on a playoff game, whether it's the Rona Dang Ball people or you can't win this way people, whatever it is. Baltimore, if one or two things break in their direction, are in this game and we're talking about an epic, we're talking about maybe something completely different. A couple fourth downs, a pass that Andrews I thought should have caught or made
up. That's a
or
lot.
Not.
You know, in the way of a football game, that's like if we pretend like they were close in this game, then everyone who has ever played a game is close. They got dominated.
It ended up that way, right? They couldn't get it back, right? Once Tennessee got that 14-point lead, everything you're saying is true. My point is, we were this close, a whisker close to it, not being a 14-point lead for Tennessee, and Baltimore just
agreed.
Did what they did.
I'm just saying you could say that about almost every game then.
Maybe, but I think about this one specifically, you don't get to have a referendum on playing style because a couple things broke against Baltimore that didn't break against Baltimore all year. Lamar Jackson went 2 months without a pick.
And where I'm coming from is, if you're going to take something out of this game, I would make it more about playing style, so to speak, than Lamar Jackson, if that makes sense.
Mm.
The one thing about him that worried me in this game, and I see it plenty, you know, for a guy that everyone talks about, he is an immensely efficient passer. In the same way, though, that like when Mariota was great for the Titans at times, people would say, Mariota's a good passer. Why is he a good passer? He went 14 of 19 with three passing touchdowns. I saw it in 2012 with Griffin. Griffin's a great passer. He is? Yeah, he's a great passer. He went 14 of 17 with three touchdown passes. It's kind of offense-driven. You see a lot of that with Lamar Jackson sometimes, too. There are games where he answered the bell this year, where he's got to stand there, make throws down that seam to tight ends, and he did it. I don't know that I can remember a game where more passes from an NFL quarterback came out of the chute bad.
Yeah. Well,
it looked like almost, follow me for a second, like a jugs machine shoots the ball out on that hot, you know, that velocity where it's spinning out at someone, spins it out toward the edges.
Mm-hmm.
It looked like the jugs machine was like miscalibrated, or the, you know, you use those little wheels and you kind of turn them so that it shoots it in different directions. Like it was shooting it out weirdly. He threw so many balls that were ducks in that game. Maybe it was the weather or it was cold. I don't think he was wearing a glove. I don't really know. That was alarming to me. I'll just say that. Just sitting there watching, going, oh, my God, every time he throws a ball outside the numbers, it's not a spiral. Every time. I was shocked by that. That was a little bit alarming.
Yeah, it was eye-opening.
Other than that, I had no problem. That dude ran for 143 yards and threw for 365. Now, I know a lot of that was garbage time and kind of late when they were giving up 7-8 at a time, but he still had a game the likes of which they didn't lose because of him, per se. Turn the ball over three times, can't have that.
No.
One of those picks, not his fault in my opinion, the first pick, the most important pick. But everyone's going to now make this about him. And I'm with you. I think Baltimore, I would go back to the well and try again next year and try to improve my defense a little bit. Maybe bring in another weapon to go with Hollywood Brown so I'm not relying on Willie Sneed in a playoff game.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, hopefully Ingram's healthy. I think that would have made a huge difference. But I don't. I'm not throwing out the baby with the bathwater.
Yeah, you don't go 14-2 and say, "Whoops, we messed up entirely." Right? The plans are pretty good, one in my opinion.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. If you got a thought on the Ravens, Lamar Jackson, 800-636-1067. We could talk about the other three teams that are going home next on the Fan. I just saw a video from Wizards practice at the training facility, and there's some kind of scrimmage going on, and John Wall's running the point, and it looks really good for a guy coming back from that ruptured Achilles.
Looks like what you'd think, right? Not the slim, explosive, super fast, quick, strong guy, but he looks like a guy that hadn't been allowed to run for a while, but he's moving around, you know?
Yeah, he's running the point, and he kind of pulls up and steps back and hits a jumper, but I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I guess I just assumed at this point to see that in January gives me some hope. I feel like he's on a nice, steady, progressive path.
Good for the Wizards for taking their time, by the way.
Absolutely.
Smart.
I never thought he was going to play this season for them anyways, but maybe he can get back next year to being a quality guard. And ultimately,
that's what matters.
He and Brad Beal, both with the basketball in their hands at different times, can become one of the better backcourts in basketball again.
Again, this injury has been nearly prohibitive of people coming back and being what they were. The only guy to really do it and put up similar numbers was Dominic Wilkins, and he changed how he played, frankly, because he was, you know, a Hall of Famer, one of the most incredible players
ever.
How
many guys had the injury early enough in their career they would have anyway? Because people always talk about Kobe, but Kobe was old when it happened
to him. Kobe was late. I mean, there are guys everywhere, everyone from like a LaPhonso Ellis to Elton Brand, who was a perennial star. But those guys had been in the league for a little while before that happened.
How many – I know this is – I'm not asking for an exact number. It's kind of on a whim here. But, like, point guards in their prime that were speed guys, has it even happened to? My point is, if there's not an example of a guy coming back from it, but it's only happened to a couple of guys, that's different to me than, like, we're 0 for 56 or something like that.
Yeah.
I can't think off the top of my head of how many Wall-like guys have dealt with this anyway.
I mean, the guys that I can think of, again, are guys like Chauncey Billups. But he was not John Wall. They're different players.
Wasn't he older when that happened,
but
too?
But he was older as well. So I don't have a great list, unfortunately.
But Wall, at least for right now, is on a path to being back and being some version close to what he was early next season, which would be great. 800-636-1067 is the number Tim called in Alexandria. Now, he wanted to talk, I think, about Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. What's going on, Tim?
Hey, boys. Love the show.
Hey,
thanks for having me. Yeah, I'm not a Ravens fan. I'm like you guys, you know, indoctrinated from a young age as unfortunate Redskins fans. But to hear people say that he can't win, they won 14 games this year. What I am is a UVA basketball fan, and after they lost to UMBC, everyone was like, they can't win. You know, their system, you know, you need to put up too many points. They're defensively based. They can't play from behind. But,
that's a good point.
Mm-hmm. You know, you get a couple lucky breaks, you know, here and there, and all of a sudden they're winning the next year with the same system. 30 games a year, they're winning. It's hard to win 14 games in the NFL. It's hard to win 30 games, excuse me, in college basketball. So, you know, stick with it. They'll be fine.
I'm with you. I think you are on a path right now that'll lead to Lamar Jackson being able to get you a Super Bowl. My point is, you know, I don't try to build something that I think makes it increasingly difficult. And I think, you know, just stylistically, the way they're trending, that's what they're doing. But they have to. I think that's this is how you get the best out of Lamar Jackson. He just won the MVP. He was authoring the best, most impressive dual threat season we've ever seen before. Mike Vick never did what he did this past year. And as you said, they went 14-2. It's not like because they lost this year in the divisional round and last year in the first round in the wild card round that you close the book and you try something different. I mean, you're just getting started here. I'm with you. I try to build up around him, but I think there is something to be said that it is just harder because at some point you're going to have to play from behind. If you're built where you can throw the ball well on obvious passing downs and you can beat people in man coverage and your quarterback can drop back and sling it, you can do that. That's not really what the Ravens are. That doesn't mean Lamar Jackson's not a good passer. He's a very efficient passer. It's a different thing.
I think there's even a quantifiable difference, though, between being down the way that they were and just being down. Like, if you're down one possession in the fourth quarter and Ravens get the ball back, you know, at their own 30 with 2 minutes to go.
Yeah, you can go on a 15-play drive and run it 11 times.
He can do that, but he can also drop back to pass and scramble. When you're down that many points, you can't do that, right? Everyone's just playing a shell. you're probably playing a more realistic, true defense in those kinds of moments.
So for me, it's always been a multi-possession. Like, even 14, if it's early. Yeah. When they were down 14, I didn't think it was the end of the world.
Well, you saw it. They abandoned play action. Right. There was no hint of mixing anything in. It was the straight drop back game.
But my point at 14-0 was they got to get points here soon.
Yes.
Because it can't be 17. It certainly can't be 21.
Exactly.
And what smart people will say, and I'm sure some of you are thinking right now, well, how many teams are built to do that? And I would say several. Doesn't mean that you do come back.
Right. It's not ideal.
Warren Sharp, when I said this to him, said, well, most teams don't come back from down 17-0. You're right. But some can. You know, but the 49ers probably wouldn't, but could. You know, Minnesota came back against Denver in the 3-touchdown game this year. That's a run-first team. But at least you got Thielen and Diggs, who you neglect, and a quarterback you paid all that money to that you don't have do a whole lot, where you could if you needed to. Kansas City showed you yesterday they could. You have to play from in front the way that they do it. Let's go to Steve and Larray. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Good,
man. Great, thanks.
I talked to you guys about arrogance of some of these teams. I thought it may have well been the deciding factor in two games. Your Ravens, who, don't be wrong, I'm a Redskins fan. I'm glad they lost. But 4th-and-1 midfield, the arrogance they can make it. They give the ball up right there. That team, of course, next play, they boom, 14 points down.
Yeah.
And then later on, they're down 14-6 on the 21-yard line. Field goal would have made it a 5-point game. They go for it, don't make it. I mean, 5-point lead is different than 8-point. Your thinking's different.
Mm.
But both cases, if they had punted, buried them deep, stopped them, God knows what could have happened. If they got the field goal, got within 5 points, it's a different game.
So I'm pro going for 4th downs and plus territory almost all the time on 4th and short. I am. In that moment, they went for a 4th and 1 from their own 44, I think it was. I hated that so much. Now, I'm not going to kill them because I want more coaches like John Harbaugh and more teams like the Ravens who are analytical who decide to go for 4th downs. I think it's better for the sport. I like rewarding good process. That's a good process. You should go for more 4th downs. But in your own territory, I hated that. I thought it was stupid. And the fact that they didn't get it, well, I would have thought that they would have because you have Lamar Jackson and they were 8-for-8 at 4th and 1 or less. 8-for-8. I get why analytically they did. I just thought that was a bad idea. It's 7-0. Punt and make Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry go drive the field. The way that the Titans operate, it's a 10-play drive if they have to go the length of the field. Count on a holding penalty to put them behind the chains. Count on something happening where they're not going to go the length and the distance of the field. Instead, you give them the football, shot play on 1st down, play action, touchdown. I hated going for that 4th and 1. Now, if that was even 15 yards, if that was at the 41 of their, you know, plus territory, close to midfield, 45, 46, I wouldn't have loved it. But if you're closer to the 40, past the 40, no-brainer, no doubt. I hate going for 4th downs in your own territory when you don't have to early in the game.
I didn't have near as much a problem with it as you did. To me, it's their identity, right? This is who they are. They're this incredible running juggernaut. If this was, you know, I don't know, the Warren Moon run and shoot offense at one point, you know, they're trying to line up and go power and do it in that spot, I probably wouldn't have loved it. But they've been so dominant running the football all season long that that's kind of who they are. So I didn't have near a problem with it as you did. I said, that's pretty ballsy. If it doesn't work, .. And then, of course, it didn't. And, you know, we never look back because one play later, it's a touchdown to Khalif Raymond. It's 14-0. And that pretty much sealed the game for them, sealed their fate. I try not to do that in the second quarter.
Paul Stone on the national championship game next. We've had him on to talk college football throughout the season. Always enjoy his segments. Super informed. Which Tigers are going to win it all tonight, LSU or Clemson? We'll ask him on Grant and Danny. So there was a prop bet you could have made for that Chiefs-Texans game yesterday where the largest lead for either team would have been 16.5, and you could kind of pick each team that you wanted to have the lead. Both teams covered it with 4 minutes left in the third quarter. A historical return for Kansas City after being on 24-0.
So you win that either way, right? Like,
yeah.
You won it in the middle of the first quarter.
You won it by the Texans, then you won it by the Chiefs, and then there was still 19 minutes of football left. Paul Stone is on Twitter @PaulStoneSports. We love having him on the show to preview big college football games, and there is none larger than tonight's national championship tilt. LSU and Clemson. Paul, we're trying to figure out which Tigers we should be backing this evening. So we kind of always open things up for you to steer where you'd like. When you watch the film of these teams, when you look at this matchup, what do you think?
Well, I tell you, it's just a great matchup. I think when we had these four playoff teams announced back in early December by the playoff committee, we knew that Oklahoma was, you know, obviously a rung below the other three teams, but we felt like we would have a great championship game, national championship, regardless of how the two semifinals turned out, and that's what we've got in this matchup of LSU and Clemson. I mean, it's just it's a fantastic matchup. You know, the game may or may not meet the expectation. It might not be a close game, but it certainly shapes up as that. You look at this LSU team, and obviously we talk about their offense, and we talk about Heisman Trophy winner Joe Burrow. They present defenses with really a unique situation in that not only do they have three guys that you have to cover that can even go out wide, they've got four. So it's very difficult for teams to be able to cover these guys in downfield situations. So Clemson, perhaps more equipped to do so than any team in the country, and certainly Brent Venables, highly regarded as perhaps the best defense coordinator in all of college football. In fact, he's the second highest paid assistant coach in all of college football, $2.2 million per year for Venables. The highest paid assistant, LSU's Dave Aranda, their defense coordinator, $2.4 million. But even though these guys make a lot of money and deserve that money, this might be an offensive showcase. You look at this LSU team, again, we talk about offense. Defensively, back in mid-November, they gave up 614 yards against Mississippi, 8.7 yards per play, rather. Ole Miss rushed for more than 400 yards. The Rebels quarterback, John Rhys Plumlee, rushed for over 200 yards. So they really got gassed in that game. In the four games since, LSU certainly looks better on paper. In games against Arkansas, Texas A&M, Georgia, and Oklahoma, gave up an average of 4.1 yards per play, a quarterback rating of just 14. Certainly Arkansas and even A&M and Georgia, their offense is a little bit maybe down from some previous years, but still some real good numbers there, and I think they have improved. It's just going to be a great matchup. You look at LSU, I made them actually, by my power ratings, made them a one-point favorite. Factored in a couple of points for the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, which is going to be full of purple and gold and will be somewhat of a home setting for LSU. But I think the number's gotten away a little bit. You see now the line has been as high as 6 and 6.5. Money coming in today on the Clemson Tigers down to 5 in most locales with a total of 67.5. But it's just going to be a great football game, guys, and I know we're all looking forward to it.
Yeah, Paul, I really like this Clemson team. Everybody's talking LSU, rightfully so. The run they just went on, what Joe Burrow did this year, it's video game type stuff. But this Clemson Tigers team, I remember a couple years ago, everyone talked Alabama, and they spoiled everyone's party by winning the national title. I get kind of a similar feeling this year, but you talk about that defense. It's so good. The numbers bear themselves out. But they haven't played an offense like LSU's, though. What's the biggest challenge for them tonight?
I think it's covering those receivers downfield. I mean, you look at this Clemson team, last five seasons, beginning in 2015, when they kind of took over the supreme spot in all of college football along with Alabama. Since the beginning of 2015, they're 69-4 straight up. They've only been cast as an underdog since 2015 six times. They're 5-1 against the spread as an underdog, won four of those games outright. I think one thing you're going to see LSU try to do, offensive passing game coordinators like Joe Brady, what they look at is they look for vulnerabilities. They look for a weakness. And the guy they're going to try to attack is Clemson safety Tanner Muse. Look for them to try to drag the tight end out, whether it be Thaddeus Moss, or I think even more than that, more likely, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the running back, who not only rushed for over 1,300 yards this year, but caught 50 passes for 399 yards. I look for LSU to try to get him 101 downfield against Tanner Muse. I think Edwards-Helaire is going to catch a few balls and have a big game in the receiving game tonight. But this Clemson team, again, they feel, you know, Dabo plays the card of the underdog probably as well as
as anybody, and he's been playing it all year. There's no denying in my mind that it's difficult to say just how good this Clemson team is compared to past Clemson additions. They played the 56th most difficult schedule in the nation, according to Jeff Sagrin, which is really low for a Power 5 team. Before playing Ohio State in the national semifinal, only had played one team in the entire top 30 of Jeff Sagrin, that being Texas A&M. So they really feasted on some opponents who really weren't at their punching weight. Ohio State moved the ball on them a couple of weeks ago in the semifinal. I think LSU is going to probably move the ball on them a little bit. It's going to be a high-scoring game. I just think Clemson, with their familiarity, the fact they know their way around the big stage, and the fact that they've got Brent Venables, I think Clemson's going to win this game in a very close game, in a high-scoring game.
Wow. Paul Stone at Paul Stone Sports with us on Grant and Danny. What do you think is the better unit in this game? We got the number one offense in the country in LSU, averaging 48 points and 564 yards, and the number one defense in Clemson, giving up less than 11 points and 245 yards. Which group is better if you had to pick, the LSU offense or the Clemson defense?
Well, I'll say it with a caveat. The game today with the targeting and just all the rules and the fact that they can only practice so much and guys don't tackle as well, everything about today's college football is geared and is an advantage to the offense. So the way the game is today, even though Clemson's got a great defense, only giving up 11 points a game, I think Ohio State had over 500 yards against them. I think LSU is going to move the ball on them. So even though I don't think it's really a – you're not really comparing apples to apples or it's not a fair comparison, I think LSU offense is going to have some success against the Clemson defense tonight. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. I think both teams are going to maybe even hit 35 points.
What's the key for Clemson's offense to kind of get going? Obviously, we know their receivers just studs. I think Etienne's got to get involved early, whether it's a big run or even a pass catch for a run. What's the key for them, do you think, to start doing it against LSU tonight to keep pace?
I think Travis Etienne is definitely a guy to keep an eye on. One thing that many of your listeners may or may not know is Travis Etienne, he's from Jennings, Louisiana, which is not too far from Baton Rouge in New Orleans. So he's a guy that got away from the Tigers. He actually has a little brother right now who's a big-time recruit, which LSU and Clemson are both after. But he didn't play well. I think he got injured the last time they played a game here. And I think this is a big moment for him. I think he wants to atone for that. He's playing against the school that many felt he would go to just naturally, and he's probably taken or he has taken a lot of flack for bypassing LSU and going over to Clemson. So I think he's a key. I think another key, if you look at Clemson, they haven't given up a whole lot of sacks this year. I think they've given up, trying to think of the number off the top of my head, they've given up only 15 sacks this entire season, but 8 of those have been in the last 4 games. So they need to protect Lawrence, give him time to throw. Again, another thing, as far as Trevor Lawrence, we saw a taste of it against Ohio State. The touchdown run, I believe it was 67 yards. And if you watch that live, I mean, any time a quarterback 6'6", 225 pounds, scores against an elite defense on a run of 67 yards, it makes you take note. But this wasn't some kind of fluke. I mean, those guys were close to him, and they couldn't catch him. He stayed ahead of them and outran them. So I think Trevor Lawrence in the running game, I mentioned a little bit earlier in this interview that the quarterback for Ole Miss, John Rhys Plumlee, rushed for over 200 against LSU. I think Lawrence in the running game, Sam Ellinger earlier this year for Texas, rushed for some yardage. So I think it's something to keep an eye on as well is Trevor Lawrence on design plays and off schedule running the football against LSU.
Paul Stone, Paul Stone Sports, you're on Grant and Danny. Information always bountiful. Thanks so much. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for you guys having me on, and everybody enjoy the game tonight.
Yeah, thanks, we certainly will. Love having him on to chat college football. By the way, LSU opened a 3.5-point favorite, and 90% of the early money came in on them. So that's why that line moved. But you heard him. He likes Clemson plus 6. Sounds like he liked the over. I didn't ask him about that directly, but he said he could see 70 points being scored easily. 67 in most places right now is the total. He mentioned that underdogs are 5-0 against the spread, the national title. Ohio State in 2015, 6.5-point dog. Clemson, 6.5 points. Bama, 2016. Clemson again in 2017, 6.5-point underdog with Alabama. And then in 2018, Georgia, 3.5-point underdog against Alabama and only lost by three. So you've outright had two of those teams win. The other two have covered in losses. Clemson trying to make it now a total of five straight years where that happened. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan, steamrolling toward the national championship game tonight. Put a bow on the show next.
Where's that coming from?
Well, no. Okay, so I've been trying to load the Antonio Brown video for like 10 minutes because we don't get good service in here.
Yeah.
So it finally apparently loaded and just started playing. But because he's like screaming and cursing at his kid, I guess.
Yeah, it's not safe for work.
It's an
apparently
NF.
I didn't realize we were going to go with that, but I'm glad you dumped that in case that was hurt.
It's also not safe for your three-year-old when you're yelling at your
Probably
three-year-old.
Probably not. A lot of people keep tweeting me saying, there's a new video Antonio Brown put out. He's now irrelevant. I don't have to talk about Antonio Brown anymore. He's not in the league anymore. He's not a wide receiver. He's just a guy that lives in Florida. I don't care about Antonio Brown anymore. He's just a dummy, to be honest with you. If he's back in the league, we could talk about his videos that he posts. This video, I don't care about. I'm going to watch it to see that he's a maniac, but we don't need to spend time about it on the radio. Everyone's like, why aren't you guys talking about the Antonio Brown video? Who? He's not a wide receiver. I don't care about him.
I think I'm kind of with you in the sense that I'll watch the video if the Saints had signed him. I'll watch the video if he's in the league. But I don't just do that. I don't do like the voyeuristic, hey, look at this person losing their mind. I don't know what's going on. It doesn't excite me. It doesn't make me happy.
I still think we're headed toward a really bad ending to this whole thing, too. We're all just enjoying his crazy videos. Like, at some point, something terrible could happen. This guy obviously needs help as far as I'm concerned. He's not getting any. He doesn't want any. It's not a great thing. But anyway, I was watching the CBS telecast of Tony Romo yesterday, and it just dawned on me, people can't stand him. A lot of people like him, a lot don't. He's polarizing. Nobody likes anybody. Nobody likes anything. Everyone has to tell you why they hate someone or why they're annoyed by people. Tony Romo's really a good commentator. He's got little quirks that can be annoying. He's different. And different means unpopular in some ways, because if it's not cookie cutter, if you do anything interesting, there will be people that don't like you. If you have any opinions, if you are opinionated, if you have a strong opinion on any subject, there are going to be people that disagree with you and people that don't like you. I say all that to tell you, Tony Romo apparently has a deal being put together for him that was reported by Michael McCarthy. And this is not Mike McCarthy, the new coach of the Cowboys, or Mike McCartney, the agent for Kirk Cousins. This is neither of those people.
Yes.
From Front Office Sports. ESPN is preparing an offer that would make Romo the highest paid sportscaster in TV history, a multi-year deal that would pay him between $10 and $14 million annually.
Annually.
I'm guessing he would be the Monday Night Football guy. With Joe Tessitore.
Isn't that the idea?
And maybe they'd put Booger back on the sideline in his mobile, or maybe he would just go do something else.
Or not Joe Tessitore anymore, they'd upgrade there. I don't know.
Okay, but he wouldn't replace Joe Tessitore.
No. He's the color guy on that broadcast.
So my point is, if he goes to Monday Night Football for $10 or $15 million, first of all, wow, that's crazy.
Oh, well.
That's a lot of money for that guy. Or anybody, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
The largest base annual salary Romo ever received as an NFL quarterback, what do you think it was?
$12 million? 14?
$8.5 million.
Wow.
He'd be making more money to do Monday Night Football than he ever made in base salary for the Cowboys. That's crazy.
Yes, it is. That's nuts. It also shows you how the salaries have exploded really recently, too, by the way, in that department.
Right.
$8.5 million is your largest base. About 28 is what we're expecting for people, you know, getting signed now. Dex, like, talking, you have 40. Just a cash 40.
Just give me 40.
Maybe five times more than Tony Romo got just 6 years ago. Wow. Unreal.
But big Romo guy. If I was ESPN, I'd want him.
Yeah.
Because
I don't know that I could do that even if I wanted him.
Whose money is it? I mean, what's the difference?
I guess.
It's TV money. It's dumb.
Is the goal to make money? I don't know. But the idea you're doing that is it's gonna get us that many more viewers.
They got to do something with Monday Night Football.
Yeah, get better games. That's what you do. You got to work in the same draft that Sunday Night Football got.
Right.
Because the matchups stink.
I just mean their telecast, though.
Oh, yeah. So, too.
I loved Gruden. He was good. Booger's a... like, seems like a really cool dude. I'd want to kick it with Booger. I don't know if he's Monday Night Football caliber in terms of the analysis we're getting. I would put Lewis Riddick in there. You know, if you went three wide with, like, if you wanted to go Romo and Riddick and Tessitore, I think that'd be really good. I don't know that you need three. Mm. I mean, to me, I've always liked two-man booths. Play-by-play, color. So maybe that's Tessitore and Romo. I don't know. But that's just a lot of money. When I heard $10 to $14 million, I couldn't believe that.
Because they've been trying to recreate this idea of a star as the color guy, right? Since Don Meredith back in the day. So they've done this thing with Dennis Miller. Yeah, he's running around there like he's being chased up the Ganges River. Like that nonsense. Tony Kornheiser doing half a season.
I always get so sad when you do Dennis Miller. Like, I haven't seen a guy run like that since the 64 election debates with Tillman versus Rodman. Like,
right.
What?
Yeah, I remember that too. Dennis, thanks for the reference, bud.
No quarterback slung a ball like that since I went to the bank and they didn't give me anything but a quarterback. And it's like, please stop talking
right now.
You're not being funny or interesting.
Right? And they're trying to do serious analysis. Doesn't work. So they've determined they can't just do a regular person, right? They've got to do a star. And so Romo would kind of fit that bill. That's the idea. Is we're going to go back to what worked for us like in the 70s. I don't know, man. To me, just have a good telecast. You need better games, and you need a good, clean broadcast where nobody's making fun of Booger McFarlane because he told a team the best thing to do is to run it on third down so you can spike it on fourth. Just clean that up, and you'll be fine.
College betting line for tonight. You just heard Paul Stone talking about it. -5 right now is what the new number is. Who are you taking?
This is probably congrats to LSU, but I like Clemson, man. This reminds me of a couple years ago when the only conversation was Alabama repeating as national champion. Clemson was an afterthought. And Clemson won the game. This is what it reminds me of. I mean, Clemson's not as good. I mean, they had a softer schedule, weren't as good as LSU for the majority of the season. But for me, I think they do that thing where they sneak up on everybody. This month layoff or, you know, however long they've gone without playing is a factor. I think Clemson wins it.
Give me LSU. Give me Joe Burrow and the boys.
Yep.
Hang 40 tonight. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Thanks for listening. If you missed any part of the show, radio.com is where you can find our app. Rewind us as much as you'd like over the next 24 hours. TheFanDC.com, GrantandDanny.com as well.
And now I watch.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.